Good morning on Tuesday, June 10th, 2014. This is Brian Madden, and you're listening to a special edition of our BrianMadden.com podcast. I'm connecting from San Francisco. We've also got Gabe in Omaha. How are you today, Gabe?
Not bad. Not bad. Did you just snap your fingers when we started this thing? Is that a thing that we're doing now?
No.
When you came in, I heard a...
that actually sounds kind of cool. Let's start doing that. And we've got Peter Bookman on the phone also. Are you in Utah, Peter?
I'm actually in Toronto, Canada. Let me snap too, if that's all right. Yeah. All right. There you go.
And so Peter is, so you do global strategy for Sphere 3D. And you were also one of the founders of V3 Systems, which was acquired by Sphere 3D. So now you're at, Sphere 3D.
Yeah, that's why I'm up in Toronto. That's where the home base is for Sphere 3D is here in Mississauga, right next to Toronto. It's the land of the Great White North or the other America.
The other America that you have to go through immigration to get to.
Yes, it feels like you go you go right up, you know, from New York to the other New York, and everybody seems to be awfully connected, but you got to go through immigration to get there. Everybody speaks English, you know, everybody takes American dollars. It's easy to be here.
So let's talk about, you know, in the sort of lead up to this podcast, I wrote, you know, in the introduction, like, all right, let's talk to Sphere 3D and find out what they do. I should disclose this. So this is one of our sponsored podcasts. So this is sponsored by Sphere 3D. With the idea is we're going to kind of dig in, talk about the technology and you know, how your products work and that kind of stuff. But I don't actually know too much. I mean, so I know V3 Systems was a hardware maker, and V3 made hardware that was sort of specifically, it was like servers designed for VDI that were sort of like pre-tuned, you know, ready to go. But I hadn't heard of Sphere 3D before they bought you at V3.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those little companies that nobody ever heard of. But when I ran into them, it was we got to do something together, whatever that is. They've been around. We've been around for about 4.5 years. The glassware product line has easily 10 man years of development into it on the application virtualization side of things. And has a really unique approach to that, making things a lot simpler. The theme that I liked coming at it from V3 with the appliance-based approach, drop-in appliances, using local storage, performance-based. The desktop cloud orchestrator tool we built was intended so desktop guys, like just not guys who know virtualization, could easily administer desktops virtually or physically basically the same way. And this is similar from an application perspective. It's a very, very simple session-based application virtualization side of things. So I had to combine the things and see what we could do to make everybody's lives easier from an application and desktop perspective.
And can you talk a little bit, I mean, glassware, I don't know anything. So glassware is a software product from Sphere 3D. And so Sphere 3D is a software company. They don't make hardware, right?
Right. Well, you know, they both use an appliance-based approach. But yes, absolutely, it's all software, and glassware in particular is built on top of a Windows server stack today. But throws out the you know, Hyper-V or any of the other hypervisor stuff, and uses instead more of a microvisor-based approach or a hypervisor that's specifically rebuilt for applications specifically, that is part of the glassware offering. So you don't see the hypervisor. There's nothing really to administrate, but you do get the benefits of simply being able to go to a web-based UI, install Windows-based applications. It's capable of doing a lot more than Windows stuff, but... you just install it like you would an app on anything else, and poof, it's streaming to all of the devices you're authorized to stream to.
So in that sense, the positioning of glassware is sort of like, I mean, it's going up against like any other sort of like action. Is it focused on just app delivering applications or delivering applications on desktops also?
Any of the above. You know, we wanted to focus on, and that's what you would see, is it's very, very simple. So it's delivering of desktop applications. To talk about a couple of the use cases that we have announced. One is in the healthcare industry. There's an ISV by the name of Novarad. They're in the radiology business. They have about 800 and some odd hospital networks under management. And we, you know, they were doing things with a lot of physical hardware. They did physical workspace management. They had just brought online an iPad application, but were overwhelmed with being able to offer the same thing with Android and Windows, of the, you know, the tablets and phones and all the things that everybody wants to do. So they used a combination of the V3 tech product line now for the workstation stuff to replace that, and or R, I should say. And then the application side, they're using this so that they can focus on the application they wrote, which happened to be written for Windows. And basically they've ditched or are ditching the limited use iPad application in lieu of being able to use the applications that are full-featured that we brought touch and all the things you might want with a rich application to take advantage of the local resources of the iPad or the Android or anything else.
So if the customer wants to use this, I mean, like, you know, you say it's on, I guess it can be on your appliance or it can be on, you know, whatever hardware, but you say it's not using a hypervisor. It's more like a microvisor. So is Windows installed bare metal on the the box, and then you install your layer that does – is it sort of like a session virtualization thing, like the way Terminal Server would work? Or is it it's all within one session, and you're just kind of wrapping each – like connecting users directly to applications?
I mean, microvisor is the same term that Bromium uses. So that's immediately what my mind goes to. But, I guess I'll let you explain it.
I think that Bromium did a lot of the work, and I hesitate, you know, it's one of those use the microvisor term or not. I want to in using that term pay homage to Bromium, because I think they did a good job of differentiating, you know, what a microvisor is. And I'd say, yes, it's a session based application virtualization type technology, but just one layer above that in that it actually can keep each session separate from each other, both in the application and the user. So it's something more akin to exit the Windows world and kind of go more on the Linux side, you know, kind of KVM, or at least where you can either, you know, go type one type virtualization or type two hypervisor from an application perspective, but use whichever one is ideal. And Glassware automates and makes that very simple, where you just simply install the application. Yes, Brian, it's Windows Core or Windows 2008 or 12 server embedded underneath. And then, so there's no, like I say, no Hyper-V in there. It's really built only for applications. In fact, one of the things we are discussing right now is just how much of a trick this might be to bring desktops back to something that doesn't have the notion of a desktop, because there's no desktop in this, only the kernels underneath necessary to run the applications.
Okay. Yeah. So, and then you're delivering that down to the user. Is it via an HTML, like via a web client, or do you have client apps for, you know, iOS and those different platforms?
We have both, and they vary all over the place. The HTML5 is the catch-all, so we do have an HTML5. There are some interesting things about that. We don't use Canvas like a lot of other people do, partially because if you use an iPad as an example, there's an iPad client. But should you want to use the browser so you don't need to install something on an iPad, you pick up an iPad, what have you, you know, Safari doesn't have, you know, full HTML5 capability, and it still works. You can use either, and we have both. We have clients for lots and lots of machines. You know, I'd love to say all, but that's asking a lot, and I know that's not true. But with HTML5, that brings it to everything else. So We have a combination of clients that you install, as and you get unique capabilities with that, as well as HTML5 capability to get everything else.
So, so you're saying you don't use Canvas for the HTML5 client?
We do not.
So, interesting, because I guess I need to have more conversations then, because I thought that it was basically either Canvas or, like, you know, a Chrome plugin, that those were your options. And of course, the Chrome plugin is specific to Chrome and usually Windows and Mac, and that the Canvas solution was the other way around. So, but you're saying you have an HTML5 solution that works with any browser that's HTML5 compliant?
That's correct. And even the ones, like, okay, I say, that aren't, because, like I say, I mean, again, it's not exactly a popular thing to say, but interestingly enough, this is the other one, which is that Safari on iPad, for example, you know, it does HTML5, but it is missing Canvas. Okay. Or at least that's my understanding, I should say. And so you won't normally see somebody streaming an application in a Safari browser on an iPad. You'll see a native application version, but we could do either one, and we do either one.
Okay, cool.
So the applications are installed into Windows, and then, so I assume that's sort of like done in the interactive kind of normal way, like the, you know, the admin clicks, you know, next, gets it set up and everything. And then there's some process after that where they sort of associate those applications for the users, and then it's like spinning up like one, you know, instance of the application for each user that connects. But then, you know, you'll you know, that's all within that one sort of session or whatever. But then our users, like, if you want to publish different applications for different users, I assume you can do that, and all these applications can kind of be side by side, and they're all, you know, isolated from each other. Like, it doesn't matter if you're running a whole bunch of copies of one application or different applications or, you know, whatever combination.
Exactly. You nailed it. It's absolutely one of these where, you know, we had to add back, because of the Windows Core stuff, sort of a light profile management added, which also includes a user and group manager, so that we can pull it in today with LDAP, but it is independent on the Glassware solution right now. But when you add these users and put them in groups, you can add an application, put it in the group, and it automatically shows up. But each user would have, when they log in via a browser or the app or the native application, they would see the applications that they're allowed to see and access and use, which is very, very, again, designed to be simple from the administrator perspective, because it takes an average of and usually 6 clicks. I mean, it's, when I say average, it's generally 6 clicks, which includes adding it to the group. So it's a, let me install this application, add it to the group. Blammo, Brian Madden gets this application, Gabe does not.
And now, who are you going after for this, from the market standpoint? Like, do you see this as something that, you know, like, companies who are using Citrix want to use other areas, or companies who haven't really gotten down the Citrix path, or do you think this is more like a, you know, like, for more simple environments that just need an app or two and don't need like a whole bunch of crazy backend infrastructure?
I see it both ways, actually, and we see it both ways. We're definitely seeing a lot of traction with the ISVs, because, you know, something really interesting when it comes to cost and complexity, when you remove that, is the app developers themselves who are facing questions like, well, should I develop an Android application and an iPad application and, you know, a Windows embedded application and so on and so forth? You know, should we, again, do RIM, or when HP finally once again resurfaces with its, I don't remember who they sell that to, right? Their device thing. Are we gonna have to develop an app for every single one of these things? And speaking specifically in the medical space, that we've spent quite a bit of time in recently, again, because of Novrad and others, they always find the following to be true, that the mobile devices, the hardest choice is what functionality am I gonna lose by bringing in this iPad? I want the iPad app, but I want all of my radiology, you know, my PACS ability that was in the native application. So their developers have to focus on developing each one of these. And it's a great answer for that. It's a, you know, drop in the solution and you instantly get ubiquitous online. The application isn't designed to work offline anyway. It's client server based. So it works really well for them. The other side of that spectrum that I consistently am excited about and hopeful about is, yes, you know, virtualization. For those of us who have it, you know, we can't imagine a world without it. You know, no doubt it makes life easier. It's not the be all end all as much as it's an awfully interesting convenience for productivity. And whether that's applications, desktops, or data and storage and such. But being able to deliver it kind of down the stack a little bit more to people who don't have the sophistication of Citrix certified people or, you know, VMware certified people, and you just have, can you install an app? You know, the opening of our manual says exactly that. Who's this manual for? This manual is for somebody who knows how to turn on a computer and install applications on a local machine. If you do, you can virtualize your applications and deliver them to your organization or whoever you want to. So I think it's both of those. It's ISVs, people who actually have software and are weighing how much development time and resources they can spend on the given platforms, and as well as, you know, the mid-market and small who, you know, kind of for me, like Kavisa for apps, if you will. You know, this needs to be a lot simpler to just access the applications I want to virtualize.
Okay, yeah, the Kavisa for apps, that helps. I think that's a good explanation. And, you know, frankly, we've talked about this a lot in the past, that I feel like delivering Windows apps is almost more like useful moving forward than delivering Windows desktops. So like the fact that you don't deliver desktops, I'm fine with that, because, you know, if a user has a regular laptop, that's fine. They have an iPad, you know, they already have like some way to sort of, you know, get all their stuff. They just need the few remaining Windows apps that, you know, you need to deploy centrally. So I like the idea of just a really simple, like, yeah, here's like the 5 apps you need, boom, 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 and we're done.
And if setting them up is easy, that's critical too. I mean, there's a learning curve associated with deploying, you know, something via a terminal server solution or application virtualization. I mean, the simpler that is, the better. And if this thing can actually compartmentalize the applications based on, you know, or from the process level and from the user level, and it does it easily, that's cool.
It definitely has proven, and our customers so far have been ecstatic about it for exactly that reason. It does change it. You know, I don't want to forget the desktop, partially because, like you say, most of us in this space and most of us who are mobile workers are using, you know, I hear about mobility for virtual desktops. I completely agree with you guys that I've always found that it didn't sit well with me, mostly because I have a laptop, you know, and I need a mobile device to access my mobile environment. That's kind of strange. Now, I just want to talk briefly, though, about Novarad and how these work together, because like it or not, there are these physical workstations that they're managing with the old solutions. You know, think Landesk and, you know, Symantec Altiris, right? Where we're managing physical workstations, not laptops, not mobile devices, just old school physical workstations, because that's what's required for the workload and the type of work they're doing. So where we're using the V3 technology is for those kind of things still, where we're moving desktops, as we said before, to the cloud and outperforming what people think is capable with these physical workstations. You know, the more expensive the workstation, the easier that seems to be to me, meaning to lower their cost, their total cost of ownership, and deliver these great desktop features. But absolutely, barring that, you know, if you have your virtualized application environment to access your Windows applications, you don't need a desktop. I already have one. You know, I have an Apple desktop. I have a Windows desktop. I have whatever I have. What do I need a virtual desktop for?
That's our future. We talked quite a bit about how the future of Windows is middleware and how we're just going. The only reason that we use Windows today is the applications, and it just happens to be that there's so many Windows applications that we might as well deliver the entire desktop, because that's what users are used to having as their primary interface to those applications. But as time goes by, the number of Windows applications is on its way down. It's not. It is definitely not a steep fall for the number of Windows applications in an enterprise. But at some point, there will reach a tipping point where we have to kind of reassess. We're deploying Windows because we have all these applications, but now we don't have that many Windows applications. So why are we supporting all of this other stuff just to make these applications work? And when we're at that point, and everybody reaches that point differently, some people have already reached that point. Others won't reach it for 5 or 6 years or 10 years. But when we reach that point, we need some other way to get those Windows applications out there easily to get users access to them, regardless of what their client platform is. And so that's sort of what we deem the future to be. And so anything that focuses on applications, we think that's probably what the future is going to hold for Windows apps.
Yeah, to me, it's, you know, I grew up when I was very young, obviously, in the mainframe world, which is still going, right? I mean, so when I hear people saying, hey, Windows is in trouble, whatever, my reaction is, you know, I have a very large collection of machines and hard drives that I never touch, that I also don't throw away for fear of losing whatever I wrote back when I was 13 years old or something, you know, that I have all these applications and these things that were created by me, and the enterprise and, you know, every corporation anywhere, I think has that same battle, which is, I don't know that it's appropriate really ever, when you look at how young computing still is, to see a world where we're going to go ahead and walk away from Windows, having it evolve and having, I like how you framed that, the middleware, where I can take my legacy applications, virtualize them with a technology like Glassware, put them out on a virtual shelf, you know, my own cloud and what have you. And if I don't use it, then it doesn't cost me any resources. But should I ever need it, I can access it at will. And in the case of, you know, I like particularly big enterprises where there's a lot of legacy Windows apps in there, you know, that they're making the decision, as I hear you suggesting, that are we going to walk away from this?
Brian, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. So our link to Toronto has gone.
Yeah, you're in.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
It's all right. No problem. Well, and I was kind of talking about the apps and the, you know, legacy Windows and all that kind of stuff. But along those lines, a couple questions from the chat room. Someone asked if you can virtualize mainframe apps. I don't actually know what that means. If they mean like the,
I assume that's
the client,
right? You can probably do the client, right?
You know what? It comes down to this microvisor and differentiations in it.
That's the second question.
So we have shown people, in fact, Fortran written applications for PDP-9 that are running for, you know, the PDP-9 operating system, file system, and everything running on top of what we're talking about, with the application, of course, that's interesting. And there are some interesting use cases for that, obviously. So that's definitely something that a framework like this is very capable of doing. Because it is a, you know, kind of a ground up approach, like I say, not lost. And I think worth emphasizing is how long this has been in development and why. John Morelli, who couldn't join us, John Morelli, the CTO and founder of Sphere 3D, got his start in the handset industry, like the, you know, the cell phones we're all using. And as the pace at which cell phones were coming out and features were added increased, the operating systems underneath became the problem and the bottleneck, because there wasn't like a universal Symbian, you know, operating system that could keep up with even the chipsets and everything. It was a disconnect. So they created a, you know, what they called microvisor back then, that was meant for the handset to kind of virtualize what went on above and below it. This absolutely can be used, and we've shown to people that. That's why I presume why that question is being asked. Yeah, and we're talking to people about use cases for that and some very specific customers who have some very interesting problems of mainframe applications running on that.
When looking at applications, is there are there certain types of apps that work better than others? Or, because I feel like with a lot of these different products, app virtualization and, you know, session virtualization stuff, you kind of run into incompatibility issues. So you know, like, I assume if, like, apps require drivers or something like that, that's, you know, would pose challenges.
We actually, I'm fond of talking about where we're going and what we're doing as software-defined everything. Part of the reason why I think that's so important is because of the consumption-based cloud model we all like. Like I say, it has to cost me nothing when I'm not using it. And I'm willing to pay a premium when I do want to use it because I know the value I'm going to get from it. So today, anyway, coming back to that mainframe question, you know, those kind of things are not that six-click, very simple deployment model. You know, those are a lot more complex of what you can do with a microvisor. You know, you can put anything in these containers and run them right alongside these other applications. That's why that's so weird. I mean, it's and really cool. I have a mainframe PDP-9 application written in Fortran running right alongside, you know, Outlook, for example, right, that's been virtualized on in the same Glassware environment. So I would say today anyway, of course, it goes without saying Windows is that simple thing. And we have not run into complexities around driver abstraction and drivers. We have provided some customizations to optimize the experience for specific applications, you know, whether that's stuff written for Chromebooks or to take advantage of what's on the Chromebook. You know, it's really nice and handy to be able to take advantage of Siri on the iPad for these other applications, even, you know, without having to write anything for your application. So it really comes down to the easiest application to deploy is the Windows applications. Those are, you know, like I say, six clicks. The other applications were capable of doing so much more, but we're just getting started as it pertains to customer deployment and such.
How does that actually work? Like this, like Fortran app for PDP-9. I mean, like, is that running? So that's like running on a Windows server also. And is there like a PDP-9 emulator inside the container, or how does that work?
You just basically nailed how that works. Of you know, because you have this hypervisor, microvisor, and emulators, and this particular emulator, to speak about that one, came from. I'll have to look it up. The Fortran development and the PDP-9. It specifically made to emulate PDP-9. So that, you know, it is as close as you're going to get to the hardware. It's if you're developing a Fortran application for a PDP-9, you're going to take this particular emulator anyway. And it just so happens this one can be put in a microvisor and ran alongside the other ones.
Okay, yeah.
And separate from each other, but able to, if you so desire to design it to connect to each other, you can absolutely do that as well. But really, any emulator native, you know, that emulates hardware, we can take advantage of.
So, yeah, because at that point, those are just essentially just Windows apps, right? So, you know, you've got your solution for a Windows environment. And so if there's a Windows app that is an emulator, then you can run that, put it in your container, and then deliver the app down.
We worked with apps made in 1968. That's
exactly.
That's pretty cool.
it's a reminder whenever we give this demo and whenever we're talking to customers who really do have that problem, you know, it's a reminder of just how far we've come since 1968. Because, yeah, it's you know, there's something about, hey, I'm still using this command line thing to churn a whole bunch of, you know, student records and student loan records and stuff like that, right? That it's interesting that we're still doing that today. You know, is as we say, you guys are right on the money, I think, about the Windows application world and what it was written for. It was written for Windows. When I think about how these all come back to the story, well, we're still using these mainframes apps because they were valuable, because we value what they do and what they did. And moving them off of the mainframe to something else has proven itself to be something that's not worth the cost, especially for something that still just works. So we maintain a legacy platform written a long, long time ago that many of us, if not all of us, don't really want to know what's inside that mainframe code, that Fortran code. We just want to be able to have our, you know, student records, our patient records, whatever's in there, do what it does and rely on it. And we would need the same applications to be able to do exactly that. And that's what this framework was designed to do. Make it very, very simple, but also make it so that you lose nothing as you move from real hardware to emulated hardware and can take advantage of either native hardware, emulated hardware, or anything in between, like GPUs, for example, where what if I just want to allow direct access for every application on every application that's a specific application to be able to take advantage of the GPUs under it. But now I can do interesting things with that microvisor, like dedupe the actual GPU processing, you know, very much like the IOPS deduping we've seen from others in the past. This allows for some pretty interesting functions with regards to if you can have a 3D application. This is what you were talking about earlier. Why do I need a 3D desktop at all? It's really, really expensive to do 3D desktops for a desktop that isn't 3D anyway. And 3D apps, on the other hand, that's pretty fun and sexy.
Interesting. I never even thought about deduping GPU calls.
So someone in the forums asking about relationships with Dell and Ericsson. Is that because I know V3 back in the day used Dell as your hardware provider. So do you guys work with other, you partner with other companies like that now to deliver your solutions?
We have announced, speaking of healthcare, that we, Sphere 3D is partners with Dell. We're in their drive facility, which is, specifically catered. It's Dell and Red Hat, Intel, VMware for Epic, which is a rather large electronic health record provider. And so we are officially partners there in the Drive program and are in their facility in Madison, which caters to being able to provide demos and show people, you know, this virtualized stuff, virtualized applications and pieces and parts. As for Ericsson, we just recently announced from the managed service provider perspective that we're beginning a relationship, I'd put it that way, with Ericsson, and have some rather interesting joint stories being built as we speak. Because, you know, when you apply this, there's really two consumption models you're going to talk about. There's people who just buy the infrastructure CapEx style, and there's those people who are going to subscribe to it. And, you know, I think all of us can kind of see within ourselves that some of us are going to be completely consumption based, and some of us are going to be completely, I want to own my hardware and software and all the licenses based. And there'll be hybrid in between that say, let me buy my stuff and then subscribe to stuff like failover or redundancy and things like that. So there's actually, we've already announced both of those. And there's more announcements coming, obviously, because both of those are really still prequels if you're watching who's in their networks of the really amazing stuff that's in development here. This is really game-changing stuff.
So one of the questions I thought was kind of interesting, like, how do you compete against companies like Citrix and VMware? I mean, you're obviously a smaller company with, like, fewer resources to put into it. So why are customers picking you over, you know, like a VMware or Citrix solution?
Candidly, I think it's worth paying props. I mean, for one, you know, I am on the V3 side, we have been and we will remain in as much as they'll let us, you know. VMware partners. We're big fans of VMware. We're big fans of Citrix. I really would hate for the message to get lost that we're direct competitors with Citrix. Yeah, sure, we do application virtualization, or VMware. Yeah, sure, we do desktop and application virtualization. However, on the V3 side, you know, we have a unique architecture that, as far as I know, you guys tell me, is still unique to V3 in our use of local storage, where the replica disk sits on the local appliance. We're not caching. We're not doing any of that stuff. So within the VMware, we are a very niche thing that has a niche purpose, which is to make it really, really simple for on-premise deployments for IT guys that are desktop guys, not virtualization guys, no VMware certifications necessary, right, to be able to manage their desktops. And for glassware, similarly, you know, is it competitive? You know, I of course it is. But we don't have a fraction of the management tools that a Citrix does. Now, our answer to that, of course, is I don't think you can have both worlds. I don't think you can have the complexity that comes with being able to customize Citrix any way you want it, you know, and you can, right? I mean, you can have global, small, big, you know, tiered architectures, all kinds of fun stuff like that. With Glassware, when you cluster Glassware infrastructure, as we did with, for example, Corel Office, if you go and play with their competitor to Adobe's, whatever that's online, whatever the suite is they do now, that's powered by Glassware behind the scenes. And we have appliances scattered all over the world with a an appliance-based approach where each one of these appliances are clustered with each other. It's very simple, but not very configurable. So there's a lot of management stuff. There's a reason why you get Citrix certifications. I don't know why you'd get a certification for Glassware when you're going to do six clicks, you know? So I think the pros and the cons are easy to see for us, which is when you're an ISV that either A, can't afford Citrix, and I'm not talking about the licenses, I personally don't see that they're that high or nasty. I think that it's one of these things of how much expertise and how much time does it take to do a deployment are questions that get asked that will quickly direct you towards either Citrix or VMware or us, where our average deployment time is, you know, 2 or 3 days, if even that, because the architectures are simple. You know, they're on premise, just like your physical desktops or physical app or your applications are. And the management is web-based UI stuff that is very, very simple. Does that make sense for how that's positioned?
And I guess, and again, that's going back to the Kavisa thing too. Like, so even I assume like setting up your, I don't know what you call them, like clusters or whatever. You just sort of like, you know, point them towards each other and they just make it work.
That's exactly right. We don't have this, hey, design your policy stuff. It's a, okay, guys, when you connect by geography, aka latency first, and then followed behind that is if the load is too high, go to the next one that has the best ping. I don't give you the option to say design this for your own quality of service. It's a, you just drop them in and they do what they do. That's it. You know, virtualize your applications, call it a day. It's not one of these things where you tie your Glassware to all this backend infrastructure of compute and networking and all these kind of things. You know, you just drop them in, tie them to each other, exactly like you said, Brian, and the pros and the cons come with it because it doesn't bend around your infrastructure. You know, we're very sensitive to an enterprise company that, frankly, I don't see us as a great fit for, because they're, when you have all these, you know, three data centers in three places and you have your policies and everything in place, we don't bend very well. You know, the policies are preset. It's a drop it in and virtualize your application, call it a day. That's it, you know. It's decide which users and groups have access to what, and you're done. That's it. So, you know, you don't have all these granular, well, if you're in this circumstance, you get this, and, you know, all the enterprise things that you do want. You know, all the policy engines aren't there. They're just built in. We will evolve, obviously, to do a lot more than we do now. And stay tuned for that, of course, because they're really interesting, because I've never heard of some of these requests for features. Speaking of the middleware stuff you just described, I like how you framed that. The features we're getting asked to include and build tend to revolve around that kind of an idea, which I think, you know, Citrix and VMware are not really slated to be.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was just going to say, like, that also kind of helps explain, like, how you're able to do what you do, like, as a smaller company. Like, it's just a simpler product. And so, you know, yeah, it's just like, click, 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 it's done. It makes assumptions about your environment. If it works for you, it's great. If not, go Citrix or VMware. But that's also how you're able to, you know, do it with just with being a smaller company. You know, you don't have to build out like 40 billion features and to support 40 billion platforms and all that kind of stuff.
And support 20 years worth of backwards compatibility. And I was going to say, I don't want to ignore the chat room. Go ahead and finish, Peter, and then we can hit a few questions.
I was going to say, I mean, I appreciate you guys. We've known each other a bit. And I'll say that, you know, I'm an entrepreneur for a reason, like you say. And I find myself always asking the questions of, what can you design if you don't have the legacy tail? If you don't have the, I had to design, I mean, let's back, you know, let's go back in time to Citrix 20 years ago, right? Citrix was a simple product, right? It did some very simple things. And it evolved over time for the audience that it could adapt to. And we're looking at it similarly. If we're starting small, we work for what we work for. It's actually, we're caught off guard by the number of use cases we're quickly finding. Candidly, our size is in the way right now of the demand we have. We have more demand than we know what to do with. When you look at even the caliber of the ISVs we're talking to, most of which we can't talk about yet, you know, we're a small company. As I say, we're out of Toronto based, and some of the strategic moves we're making, like we announced acquisition of a very established storage company that has a pretty decent channel, are designed to help us provide the foundation to grow from. But yeah, it's absolutely, it pays to be small and begin again, just to throw out the old stuff and keep what you want, but be able to not have to cater to a legacy audience.
And that storage company you bought, who are they?
Overland Storage. And that's obviously not closed. We announced that we are buying. So,
okay.
Nothing to report there yet, except for that we announced that the intent to buy. And it's definitely exciting because, like I say, in a software-defined everything, it's nice to be able to have this tool chest to pull from. Let's use V3. And that's what Sphere 3D really is bringing to the table, is you bring this war chest of legacy stuff that you can take the pieces you want. But the idea is to begin anew. The idea is to say, well, what we call VDI as that is powerful and it works for where it works. But for that physical workstation management thing, does it work for that? Well, it may or it may not. And for a lot of these people, they're really excited about the combined offering of, this one-stop shop, if you will, very small, like you say, very personalized experience, but simple. It's a, I do what I do, I don't do what I don't do. And we're happy to talk about roadmap and where we're going with these customers and take into consideration features they would like to see that we are finding don't match up to the enterprise demands that have developed over time.
And then, so to be clear, so people, when they buy it, are they buying the appliance and it's dropping in like that? Or can you buy just the software and run it on your own hardware?
I guess I'd say today it's being built as the appliance. Now, I'm going to caveat that by saying there's two audiences. Some of which you already asked about on this call. So if you happen to be a vendor that has your own hardware and your own delivery model for an appliance-based solution, then we're a software. We delivered a software to you who does that. But if you're a consumer and you're an IT department and you're looking to, virtualize your applications and deliver them to 50 people, you're going to get it as a drop-in appliance. Today, the only appliance we're offering is for 100 concurrent application usages. That may be one application. It may be, that may be, as you were suggesting, each person using three applications at the same time. But it's built to do 100 concurrent applications.
Oh, that's cool. And then so you buy that, and that's just all. I mean, it's the hardware, and that's where the IP from V3 comes in. I assume.
It definitely made it handy to do that. Yeah, I mean, it made it really easy to bring the expertise we had and apply that in this fashion and be able to offer it to a much more drop-in audience that is, again, clamoring for this. Because without that, we did need these partners, and we're working with these partners. But it was kind of a long-tail sale, candidly. You know, when you were asking about, Dell and Ericsson, I'll just say, we've all been around a while. We know what the qualification process is and such for these. So that's why I say stay tuned, right? But on the can you get it today? You absolutely can. And you can get it, speaking of which, in the very near future through, again, that Overland channel, even before, obviously, the acquisition stuff. So should that be interesting to people out there, go check it out and reach out to Overland and it will be available very, very soon through that particular channel. As again, drop in 100 concurrent application boxes.
All right. The chat room actually has blown up for compared to our normal podcast here. So there's a bunch of stuff in there. No, it's fine. It's none of it's too bad. So one person wants to basically just confirm that we're talking about running Windows apps on any device without having to download any software to the device itself, and that's what we talked about with the HTML5 connectivity, right?
Yeah, you could do it either way. I mean, there's some really exciting things we see as opportunistic. I'll cover three consumption models. One is what you said, which is if you don't want to install anything, go to the HTML5 browser and go. You know, mm-hmm. And that's it. If you want to install something, as we talked about, you can use the very Citrix model, which is the, hey, let me log into the application. I think that last time we call it Frostcat. Honestly, I don't remember what it's called in the store. Like I say, you'll see it if you go to Corel and download that. The trial, I actually don't know if the trial is going on anymore. Otherwise, it would have been very easy without having to subscribe. But right behind, but the third one is the one that interests me a lot, which is it comes down to these ISVs, which can actually effectively certify our delivery model, and the application can look like their application or a collection of their applications natively. It installs the same way on iPad and all these others as any other app, but obviously doesn't work on offline. In fact, we had one of our executives, get on a plane that didn't have internet. When they landed, they asked, hey, so what are we doing about offline access? You know, because you got so used to being able to access these glassware-enabled applications that looked local. You know, they looked mm-hmm. like they were the native applications running on the device, and they couldn't tell when they're not. You know, so those are the three that we have delivered, and I find the last one to be really, really interesting.
That actually was the next question. There was just asking about if there was intermittent network connectivity or an offline mode of some sort. And I assume that that's not out of the box possible since we're remoting these applications. But is that something that's in the works?
I think that as we've been talking about, I think certainly we spend an awful lot of time thinking about that problem. You know, I'll tell you about V3 and before VMware acquired Winova, you know, we were doing, you know, Vue offline, and I was doing it. I will be the first to say it's funny how, you know, you see the world with rose-colored glasses when it's yours, because I thought that was awesome, you know. I thought this notion of the cloud desktop being married to my local hardware made life so cool until the gaps got big. And with Horizon Vue, this is speaking for V3 still, it's very exciting. And improves quite a bit implementing that technology, obviously, so that it's much, much better than it was. But even with that, I got to tell you guys, you know what? With maybe it was the bad experience I had before, but this offline use case seems to be, if you're going to use it, do it Winova style, because the hybrid doing both doesn't seem to work well for me anyway.
Yeah, checking in and out VMs and all of that. Like, once you have your VM local, why would you ever want to give it back to the cloud? Like,
that. So. I'll just put it this way. You know, it comes down to that same discussion of where does this all fit? And I think what we want, we all want it. We want it our way. You know, if I appreciate the time here because, you know, I think the Brian Madden team is really good at describing exactly that. The BYOD and FUIT, you know, I know how to be productive, you know, so, and I offline has to be taken in consideration. There has to be an answer. I'll just say again, stay tuned because today glassware doesn't have an answer for offline. We're very interested in that and whether that incorporates the storage component we already talked about that's coming or, read into that as much as you want to or actually uses this same technology in a, let's call it a type one hypervisor way. Right. It'll be interesting, I'll put it that way, but I don't believe there's a silver bullet that solves every single problem. But the goal would be to say, to have my shelf of applications, and when I'm not using them, I'll still have them parked there, but when I need them, I want to be able to use them, and that has to include offline.
But it doesn't today?
No.
Okay.
If you have an offline use case, we already discussed that, we would tend to point you towards somebody else, by the way, or a V3 type approach with Horizon View with using offline?
Sure. There's another couple of questions in here from someone who is almost undoubtedly an analyst. talking about going, you know, does this stuff go? We talked about how it competes with Citrix, or how it relates to Citrix, I guess I should say. He asks about going head to head with VMware and Microsoft, but also about like the specific IP that powers Glassware and the whole customization and how easy it is to deploy. Is that, I mean, are you worried about Citrix or VMware or Microsoft kind of swooping in and doing the same thing, or is it pretty unique? I mean, do we?
I answer that with the Coca-Cola recipe. You know, I'll simply say this: there's a lot of Coca-Colas out there. Can anybody go and start a cola tomorrow? Of course you can. You know, and in our field, you know, this is software. There's engineers everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So, but I will say there was an awful lot of secrets that we don't show people yet. I don't know if we ever will, you know, that are the reason why we don't. We'll show you what it does. I mean, it's 6 clicks. It's easy, guys. Check this out. The how it does it, for this reason, we're going to go ahead and call it a trade secret. And by the way, there are patents that are pending. So some of those will be not trade secreted when those become public, obviously. But, you know, we always rely on a healthy, let's make sure that we keep the important stuff trade secreted and don't rely on a patent strategy as much as only a select few will know what the real differentiators are and why, like we say, I'm not saying that microvisor is the right term per se, as much as I'll just put it this way. I feel like we're closer to the Bromium model than we are to the standard hypervisor model in how we're doing this. I don't know if we're doing a good job of conveying that today, but it's unique and everything is containerized, right? Application basis.
Yeah, it sounds more advanced than a typical, you know, session host kind of situation. You're somewhere in between, that's for sure.
What we call it in the future? Hey, maybe you guys will have him. I don't know, you know, because we're keenly interested in that. And the IP there's definitely a lot. I'll put it that way. Like I say, I mean, this has been in development for 4.5 years, and you know, a lot more man years than 4.5 years. We'll put it that way, you know, and so. I think it would take a lot of engineering to copy, and they'd have to have inside knowledge about what we discovered. Because keep in mind, coming back to John Morelli, the founder and CTO, and one of them, as well as the great leadership we have here anyway, and Peter Tosiopoulos and the guys who are joining the team and the virtual team through the storage company and such. But a lot of the insights that were brought to the microvisor came from that cell phone world that John Morelli was in. And handling before he ever brought it to the Windows world and before he ever tried to do this for these reasons, you know. There's something magical about being able to virtualize not just a phone but a SIM and everything with it, you know. Mm-hmm. And being able to say, if I can do that on a Windows server, well, then a lot of these apps you were asking about, driver level and stuff, become really, really easy, relatively, you know. Even a mainframe compared to that probably is pretty easy. So I wish you could have made this particular podcast because, yeah, he brings a lot to this table. And we're still going to treat an IP as sacred. We're going to say, yep. Are we worried about that? You better believe it. Do we think that we're a small fly, you know, ointment in the fly for them right now? I would expect so, you know. I don't know if they're aware of the deals they weren't going to get anyway, you know. But for sure, we're winning these deals. So that's going to be pretty noteworthy, I think, and noteworthy rather quickly here.
It's interesting you brought up Morelli. There was another comment there that it says he held up a circuit board at the annual meeting and said it would eventually virtualize everything. What was that? Was that just kind of indicating that someday all of this stuff will be on hardware, or is there something bigger in the works? Yeah.
No, he brings a really interesting viewpoint to the world. I'm really proud to have him as our CTO, and he really is a thought leader in amazing ways. So when he did that, I mean, we've talked at length, and there is some IP filed on some of the things that we're planning to do with that. Holding up the circuit board was really about, you know, that it was only, and we've all lived this, you know, it was only a few years ago that to do this same thing took a multitude of servers, even with Glassware, you know. And then we get to 2 years ago, and then it's one server. You know, you get to a year ago, and truthfully, any laptop in the world is as powerful as any server for the most part, you know, mm-hmm. any single server. And the more and more we're heading towards this mobile device world, but really underneath some of that is some interesting ideas around, for example, what are the common elements between a GPU and a sound card, for example, that if you wanted software to find everything, you could in fact have single chips that could do everything, relying on a software to find everything stack from the end user computer perspective. So my phone can assume there's, the NVIDIA grid, right? But for everything, for sound, for video, for anything, boiled down to a single chip. It was definitely exciting, and I certainly enjoy the benefits of working at Sphere 3D and working alongside John Morelli, because, his ideas are definitely exciting, and I might add, within reason. I mean, he doesn't just say, hey, let's go to space. He says, I already built the engine to do it, you know? So yeah. Check it out. Which allows for the hope part that says all we got to do is figure out a chassis to put it in, you know?
Yeah. That's interesting because, I mean, that's a whole different conversation. But yeah, like, what is a chip? It's transistors and little memory bits. So why couldn't a sound card be a GPU? I mean, you know, I don't know.
Right. You are this now.
Or like imagine like almost like an FPGA, you're like programming like your image is changing what the hardware does. And I don't know, maybe the hardware is generic and fast enough if you can do it all in software. I don't know. This is really interesting. I never thought about that, but that's a cool idea.
I think it's both a cool idea and I think it's the wave of the future. If you're seeing what Sphere 3D is doing with desktops, applications, and like I say, our interest is clear in storage. Where we're going is exactly that. Software-defined everything provides for the consumption-based model you like. Because at the end of the day, we're not ever going to be in the endpoint business. Or I shouldn't be so bold about that. I should just say that we're of the view it's a crowded space and there's plenty to go around, you know? So unless you have something to offer, why bother? You know, it's the Chromebook phenomena is very exciting in and of itself, right? I mean, it's talk about something, speaking of which, of throw out the old and begin again. You know, it's got some real problems, but most of which on this call we've alluded to, we could solve a lot of them, right? For legacy, that really makes some interesting ideas for going forward with that and all these other mobile devices and wearable computing and all this fun stuff we're going to. But this notion of, hey, in a software-defined everything world, do I really need the hardware to be what it is now too? Or can we go back again, sort of mainframe, to more of a general purpose, right? To more of a underneath, it's just, as you said, Brian, well said, it's just transistors, you know? So it's silicone, do what you want with it, you know? I need you to be a sound card right now. I need you to be a video card right now, right? Why can't it be that?
Yeah, interesting. There were a few other questions there, mainly about integration. Is there any integration between the DCO, the V3 orchestrator stuff, and the glassware components, or are V3 and glassware still kind of separate at this point? And will they ever be merged together sort of into the same management plane?
That's a spectacular question. And today with what we're shipping, you know, I'll let you in the chaos of success that we're having for, again, a small organization as we are relative to the big organizations. We envy big company resources because, we have demand on all sides for every product. That makes combining the products tricky timing, because how do you EOL, you know, end of life, V3's DCO and incorporate its features into glassware? But it goes without saying, our aim is to make it secret. And again, it's a consumption-based pay-per-use model. So yeah, it's only a matter of time until these will be combined. Absolutely. I expect that one to be fairly imminent. When I say that, that could be by the end of this year. It could be beginning of next year, you know? But we definitely are acquiring the resources and applying them. And it's just a matter of productization. That is a new product, is it not? You know, so we have to support the customers we are acquiring right now while charting a course to a combined solution where companies, like I already mentioned, Novarad, who are doing all of the above, can use one simplified UI for all of the above. And frankly, one simplified drop-in box. Why not?
Yeah. All right. The last one, what about the gaming market? Could you virtualize, you know, PlayStation, Xbox, Wii, iOS games, that sort of thing, so the game editors would be a target for this kind of platform? I mean, that I'm not entirely sure where that's going, because a lot of that would take emulation.
Yeah, I feel like that is one of my favorite topics, only because I think that's a, you know, I'll speak for myself in saying, you know, what's interesting is I'm a PC gamer. I have every console, of course. I have kids, you know, they play a lot more than I do. But if you're going to push me, I like PC gaming. You know, my peer group will be PC gaming. And so I think that's a great question. And I get infatuated with this notion of streaming PlayStation and, you know, streaming Xbox. And candidly, I don't know if everybody else on here would agree, but coming back to what we can do with the microvisor, the can we do it is not the question. The what would you do if you did it? And who would the audience for that be for? Is, I don't even know where to start with that, candidly. Because the power of this is...
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, like, all these game makers are all about, like, locking people into their own ecosystem. So it's like they have a direct instance in this interest in this not happening, you know?
Yeah, it's
like
the hardware
platform makers.
Yeah, and so long as the franchises are all so verticalized, you know, that's why I say it's a market where I understand the draw. We all do, right? I would love to see my PlayStation virtualized. I would, of course, I would. And you know, again, it's extraordinarily not just possible, but easy to do with technology like this. But that's then you get into the licensing part, you get into the selling it how to whom.
Oh, know? Yeah, because if you're selling it to end users, I mean, specifically end users and consumers, now you're talking about you're working hard for one license or one sale. Whereas if you're selling to enterprise, you know, you make a sale, you work very hard for that, but you get 1,000 licenses out of it or something. So it changes the way you do all of your business.
But even Sony, like. So what if you can run PlayStation games on PCs now, that's bad for Sony because now you don't need to buy a PlayStation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been a forum troller in the past before because you know I'm intrigued because everybody likes to beat up Microsoft for Microsoft licensing and sort of like you guys are talking about. I think they deserve credit for it. I think they deserve credit for what they built that allowed the developers to create the problem we have. Here's the one that I'm pissed at. I always think it's funny that Apple, of all people, has no interest whatsoever in doing it. I mean, the Apple has been virtualized again and again and again, and they've historically sued the crap out of people who actually make stuff available virtualized. So it's funny because everybody likes to beat up Microsoft, don't get me wrong, and I'll get a club with the next guy and the torches and let's go hang Frankenstein. But, you know, to give them props, you know, at least they try to have a license that works. Whereas Apple, who I also love and use, you know, they say, yeah, go ahead, virtualize your iPad and put it on glassware. Only thing is, we're going to hit you pretty hard. You know, we're going to say, frankly, we're going to come at you, the user, which I think the user should take personally. You know, so I think the gaming thing is very similar, but to bring it back to our space, I'm always surprised that people aren't more pissed at Apple for their licensing baloney, right? Don't you dare virtualize an Apple application, even if my original MacBook Air got end of life by virtue of iOS. I can't load OS X on it. You know, it's then therefore I can't load the load of stuff on it. But you won't let me virtualize it either. Well, that stinks, doesn't it? I mean, that is monopolistic almost. That's
a good point.
So,
well, I mean, they'll let you run other versions of OS X on within Parallels or VMware Fusion or VirtualBox, that sort of a thing. I mean, in some ways you can. You can't. There's no classic session hosted applications or VDI type use cases that Apple will let you do, and you definitely can't run anything as a Type 1 virtual machine. But there are some ways that you can get around that. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. There's Apple is. I look at it more like Apple has just completely ignored that space. They've just made the conscious decision not to even go down that path.
And to stop others. And the only reason why I care is because, again, I'm coming back to this world where I'd like to be able to put my stuff on the shelf. the lion's share of my stuff are Apple boxes that I can't even take the hard drive out of because I can't put it in new hardware or attach it in new hardware and do anything with it because it's attached to the hardware, and virtualizing it gets me in trouble. You know, it's funny. And the reason why I care, coming back to glassware, and the reason why I'm intrigued is because I'll let the business models take care of themselves. You know, I expect that we should keep beating up Microsoft, and a license will present itself, if for nobody else than them, right? They'll go ahead and make sure that the channel gets punished, and they do really well with Azure or something, you know, with app. What's their cloud? Anyway, you know. Meanwhile, I'd like to be able to take all my applications, you know, mine, as in Peter Bookman. I bought them, you know, and use them. And it's ironic because I'm not trying to decouple them from Apple. In fact, they're likely to be the device I use. I am trying to say, well, you didn't give me anything to use for my legacy stuff, including yours. You know, that's a problem for me. I'd like to be able to take your legacy Apple applications and take them with me. Thank you. We can do that. We just can't do it within a license that I'm aware of.
So we're out of time today. There's one final question, which I assume the answer to this is yes, where basically someone's asking, if a customer came to you with their own software and their own, you know, and a particular OS that was not Windows, you know, would you guys take the time to, you know, to build a virtualization platform for that? And I would I'd imagine you'd say, yeah, give me a call, let's talk.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's very, very exciting. I will caveat that as we've been sort of dancing around here, which is, you know, we're excited to be here. We're excited for the opportunity. That's exactly the conversations we want to have. And all that being said, John Morelli couldn't be here as much as he wanted to be for this, the reason, which is exactly that answer, that question asked differently, is for us, this is about the market. This is about the customers. This is about people who haven't had the opportunity to virtualize things yet, or have had a really hard time virtualizing really tough apps. And our simplified, very simple approach makes that really easy. So that excites us a lot, and we would love to do that.
So that excitement is coming from Peter Bookman, who does global strategy for Sphere 3D. And so, Peter, thank you for taking the time for joining us and for sponsoring the show today. Really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you, guys. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, and I feel like I know what Sphere 3D does now, and the Microvisor, the Caviza, like those references are great. I think this is a solid. I feel good. I feel like I could actually explain this thing where I couldn't an hour ago. So thanks again to you, Gabe. Always thank you, Justin, yep. Doing your thing to make us our voice come to internet. Thanks for that.
Thanks to everyone in the chat room too. This was great today with a good conversation going in there to help kind of drive this conversation as well. So yeah. This is cool.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. Yep. Thanks.
Take care.